hovering around the mid-teens. And quickly, on the Chelsea Flower Show, it should stay dry in London with temperatures up to around 16 degrees. Arlene, back to you.
Thomas, thank you very much. And now on Radio 4, we begin a new book of the week. Falling Upwards by Richard Holmes carries the subtitle How We Took to the Air and tells the extraordinary stories of the pioneering men and women who were the first balloon aeronauts. From the earliest adventures with hot air, using what Joseph Montgolfier described in 1782 as a cloud in a paper bag, human beings have been endlessly enthralled by the possibilities of flight. It's an allure that continues to fascinate and exert its own hold over the author. The reader is Rory Kinnear.
My own flying dream began at a village fete in Norfolk. I was 4 years old. My uncle, a tall and usually silent RAF pilot, had bought a red party balloon from a charity stall and tied it to the top button of my AirTech shirt. This was my first balloon, and it seemed to have a mind of its own. It was inflated with helium, which is a gas 4 times lighter than air, though I did not understand this at the time. It pulled mysteriously and insistently at my button. "Maybe you will fly," my uncle remarked. He led me up a grassy bank so we could look over the whole fete. Below me stretched the little tents, the stalls, the show ring with its bales of straw and small dancing horses. Above me bobbed the big red balloon, gleaming and beautiful, blotting out the sun. It tugged me impatiently towards the sky, and I began to feel unsteady on my feet. I felt that I was falling upwards. Then my uncle let go of my hand, and my dream began. Throughout history, dreamlike stories and romantic adventures have always attached themselves to balloons. Show me a balloon, and I'll show you a story, quite often a tall one. And very frequently, it is a story of courage in the face of imminent catastrophe. Falling upwards by helium party balloon may sound unlikely, but on Sunday, 20th of April 2008, a 41-year-old Catholic priest, Father Adelier Antonio De Carli, made a heroic ascent using a very similar method. Father De Carli was known locally as Padre Ballonero, the balloon priest, and he flew for charity. He took off from the port city of Paranagua in Brazil, strapped into a buoyancy chair suspended beneath 1,000 small multicoloured helium balloons. They were grouped into 5 vivid clusters of pink, green, red, white, and yellow. His aim was to raise money for a trucker's rest stop and spiritual centre. He was known for his human rights campaigns, and that January had made a successful 4-hour charity ascent suspended beneath 600 helium party balloons. On this second flight, armed with a thermal flying suit, GPS system and satellite phone, he rose successfully to some 19,000 feet near to the edge of the sustainable atmosphere, where the sky becomes dark blue and human breath forms glittering ice crystals in the ever-thinning air. Here, close to heaven, he cheerfully reported back by phone to his flight control. He also gave a phone interview to the Brazilian TV channel Globo, in which he said he was fine but very cold, and was having trouble operating his GPS device. But he was also being carried out to sea and was now 30 miles off the coast. At 8:45 that Sunday evening, he lost contact with the Coast Guards. An air-sea rescue search was mounted early the following Monday morning, but without success. A surviving cluster of 50 balloons was found floating in the sea late on Tuesday, but without Padre Ballonero attached. The Brazilian naval search was called off on 29th of April, but his parishioners continued to believe in his miraculous survival and prayed daily for him. 3 months later, on 4th of July 2008, an oil rig support vessel found the remains of his body, lower torso and legs only, floating about 60 miles off the Brazilian coast, still attached to his buoyancy chair. It seems that part of the helium balloon rig must have separated or failed in some way during the first 24 hours of his flight. Possibly some of the balloons began bursting at high altitude, but this, of course, would have automatically reduced his lift much as planned and brought him back comparatively gently to Earth. Except that now there was no Earth beneath him. It seems that Padre Ballonero must have spent some time meditating in the sea. Finally, he was probably eaten by sharks. But he was a brave man, a daring balloonist, and possibly even a saint. The word intrepid is automatically used of balloonists, but almost always thoughtlessly. In my experience, balloonists come in every shape and personality type. Meticulous, cautious, reckless, obsessive, sportive, saturnine, or devil-may-care. But the one thing they never quite seem to be is down to earth. All of them seem to have one enigmatic thing in common, besides physical courage and a head for heights. This is a romantic dream of flying, a strange and almost unnatural longing to be airborne. There is something both exotic and magnetic about such people. The balloons themselves are mysterious, paradoxical objects. They're both beautiful and ephemeral. They're a mixture of power and fragility, of technology and terror. They make demands. Consider an earlier balloon flight for charity, which took place on the afternoon of the 22nd of July, 1785, when a full-size hydrogen balloon was seen flying at 3,000 feet over the Norfolk fishing village of Lowestoft. The balloon was heading rapidly eastwards, directly out over the North Sea, and its pilot was clearly unable to bring it back to Earth. There was nothing between the balloon and the distant shores of the Baltic. The man in the basket was 33-year-old John Money, a half-pay officer from the 15th Light Dragoons. Major Money had taken off earlier that afternoon from Ranelagh Gardens in Norwich to raise cash for the new Norfolk and Norwich Hospital founded in 1772. The Major knew a lot about horses, harness, and driving a coach and pair, but he had little practical experience of balloons. He was, however, a man of courage and resource, who enjoyed a gamble as well as supporting a good cause. Balloons fascinated him, partly for their military possibilities, but also for their sheer, if uncontrollable, beauty. He regarded them as if they were a species of wild horse. Admittedly, he'd only made one previous ascent in London that spring in what was known as the British Balloon. Characteristically, Money had somehow convinced the owners of the British Balloon to let him transport it to Norwich and to fly it solo for this philanthropic ascent. The launch went fine, according to the local Gazette. The balloon rose easily above the stately copper beeches on the northern boundary of the gardens and was then carried on a gentle summer breeze across the River Yare in a northwestwards direction towards distant Lincolnshire. But as it gained height, an improper current arose and a brisk wind blew it back across the city to more enthusiastic cheers and then southeastwards, still gaining height, towards the Norfolk coast a mere 15 miles away. By 6 p.m., the balloon was spotted sailing high over Lowestoft and heading out over the North Sea. It was supposed that some problem had arisen with the valve of his balloon and that Money was unable to vent sufficient hydrogen gas to bring himself down. He disappeared rapidly out over the sea and into the softening eastern haze of the summer evening. Among the distinguished assembly who witnessed the launch at Ranelagh Gardens was the Earl of Orford. He wrote anxiously to the local MP, William Wyndham, the following morning. "I am sorry to inform you that a Major Money ascended alone under the British balloon at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. The balloon rose to a great height and took a direction towards the sea. It was seen entering over the ocean about a league south of Lowestoft at a very great height at 6 o'clock, by which circumstance I am greatly apprehensive for his thus continuing in the air." Indeed, Money was struggling to rein in his balloon as if it were a runaway horse, but without success. It was only an hour later, when he was well out of sight of land, that the cooling night air finally deposited his balloon 20 miles off the Norfolk coast in an area known on mariners' charts as Long Sand, notorious for its shoals and shipwrecks. The balloon still had sufficient hydrogen to keep its basket partially above the waves. Waist-deep in water, Money began a long battle to remain afloat in a choppy sea as darkness fell. He soon abandoned his basket, cutting it loose and allowing it to sink beneath him, while climbing up into the balloon hoop and clinging onto the rigging. By skillfully playing the lines, he managed to hold sufficient gas in the balloon canopy to keep it partially inflated, pulling him slowly through water, almost like a kite, and giving him just enough buoyancy to stay afloat. Increasingly cold and exhausted, Money hung on grimly hour after hour as the balloon steadily dragged him further and further out to sea through the darkness. As the gas slowly escaped, he sank gradually deeper into the water until after 4 hours he was up to his chest and almost incoherent with hypothermia. Several pleasure boats and fishing smacks had in fact set out after him. Their crews were in sportive mood, playfully competing to find the airborne quarry. But as darkness fell, they grew dispirited and bored, eventually giving up any hope of recovering him. One by one they turned to beat back into port, telling each other that he was either drowned or in Holland, which came to much the same thing. Agonizingly, it appears that Money had seen several of these ships. Their sails were clearly silhouetted on the western horizon behind him, dark against the dying summer light. But they were too far away, and he was now too weak even to shout. The water was colder, and the waves came up from his chest to his chin. But one determined Coast Guard cutter, the Argus, had set out from Lowestoft. Long before a regular lifeboat service was formed, this was a professional rescue vessel, its crew skilled in the pursuit of both smugglers and mariners in distress. A balloon was a new and interesting object for them to hunt. Its skipper skillfully put the wind dead astern and, making due allowance for tides, steadily followed exactly along the balloon's last observed line of flight, with lookouts posted at his masthead. He knew that the moon was due to come up by late evening and would illuminate the sea very well if he persisted. Just before midnight, after Major Money had been in the water for over 5 hours, the pale shape of his crumpled balloon canopy was spotted on the dark waves by the crew of the Argus. They came gently alongside, carefully disentangled his body from the rigging, and hauled him out of the water. As he was pulled aboard, he stirred, and they realized he was still conscious. Well practiced in revival techniques, the crew wrapped him in blankets, forced brandy down his throat, and had Major Money joking and telling his story by the time they were back in port the following dawn. Money immediately became famous throughout East Anglia, and the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital received a splendid donation. As well as the drama and the perils of ballooning, there are also stranger, existential elements far less easy to define. The mental release, the physical heart lift, is an absolute revelation, but one not easily or convincingly described. When Dr. Alexander Charles made the first ever flight by a true hydrogen balloon in 1783, it was the feeling of absolute and almost metaphysical freedom that overcame him. Flying with an engineering assistant, Monsieur Robert, Dr. Charles launched from the Jardin des Tuileries in central Paris and travelled over 20 miles northwest to the country town of Nesle. His departure was witnessed by nearly 500,000 people, among them the American ambassador, Benjamin Franklin. Dr. Charles' brilliant account of this ascent catches a euphoric tone which never quite disappears from subsequent balloon accounts. He had laid in supplies for an aerial journey of many hours, fur coats, cold chicken and champagne. But what he actually tasted was that existential substance. Nothing will ever quite equal that moment of total hilarity that filled my whole body at the moment of takeoff. I felt we were flying away from the earth and all its troubles and persecutions forever. It was not mere delight. It was a sort of physical rapture. I exclaimed to my companion, "I'm finished with the earth. From now on, our place is in the sky."
Rory Kinnear was reading the first extract from Falling Upwards by Richard Holmes. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. This is BBC Radio 4. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday the 21st of May. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Denmark, 1007, expected southern Sweden, 1001, by 1800 Tuesday. High Mid-Atlantic, 1035, slow-moving with little change by the same time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, northwest, 5 or 6, occasionally 7 later, rain or thundery showers, fair later, moderate or poor becoming good. North at Zira, south at Zira. Variable 4 becoming northwesterly, 5 to 7, perhaps gale 8 later, rain or thundery showers, fog patches, moderate or good, occasionally very poor. 40s, northwest, 5 or 6,